Yes, yes, yes. I really want to thank the band for that. It was a special request of mine because Ms. Streisand's one of my favorites, and that's one of her more obscure, but I think powerful anthems that she does. So thank you. Thank you, James. And you know, one of the things I have to say about our James and the band is that every week they bring us music from modern artists and composers who are really expressing spirituality as they understand it today. And it's a real gift for us to have that opportunity to hear a new expression and not just the old hymns. So this month we're focusing on appreciation. Is that me? Let's see if it calms down. This month we're talking about appreciation. So the first week, you know, Lawrence does a lot of good prep for his sermons. And the first week he talked about appreciation as recognizing value in a person, a place, or a thing. And then last week, Lawrence talked with you about appreciation as adding value. That in fact, the more you think about something, sometimes the value of it goes up. It's value added. So today, Carmela and I are going to talk about some tools and processes for facilitating that kind of appreciation. The daily word, which I chose for today, was about curiosity, and the summarizing statement was, I open my heart and mind to see beyond what I already know and expect. In this place of openness, my good is limitless. To open your heart and mind to see beyond what is already known and expected is really to be curious. So we could define curious as an inquisitive interest leading to inquiry and exploration. It's actually very important to our ability to appreciate. Now, if we look at the curiosity from the historical perspective, it's had a pretty sordid past. So let me just remind you a few from the Bible. So remember the Garden of Eden, and Eve had this interest, this curiosity about the tree of knowledge. Well, we know what happened there. They got thrown out of the garden. And then there was Lot's wife. So remember when they were fleeing Sodom and Gomorrah for their lives, they were warned, whatever you do, don't look back. So you remember what happened? Lot's wife happened to turn around out of probably concern for the city and curiosity, and of course, what happened to her? She turned into a pillar of salt. The early Catholic Church considered curiosity to be, they recognized that it was powerful, but they really thought it was just too powerful for us humans. It should be left to the realm of God. And the first real kind of positive thought about that was Sir Francis Bacon, who was a devout scientist. In fact, he established what we call the scientific method. And in his writings, he posited that knowledge sprang from curiosity. In this sense, it contributed to the increase in education, and it could turn and contribute to improvement of human welfare. So that's a much more positive thought. Of course, the truth is his writing was prohibited on the list of books by the Catholic Church. So it didn't get much attention at that time. So we could go on. If we move forward to the 1900s, that's really when curiosity as the subject matter started to get some attention from psychologists. And some of them purported by the 1940s that they thought curiosity was actually such a strong trait in humans that it really kind of belonged with thirst and hunger as sort of natural in our being. Einstein said, and I love to quote Einstein because I don't think he was a lunatic, but a lot of his sayings just resonate so much with the way we are at Unity. He said, the important thing is not to stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. So I'm going to step a little further into that and say that basic human attribute of curiosity springs forth from what we in Unity call our 12 powers. All right? These are the gifts, the divine gifts that we have. And if I were to put a chart up on the wall that showed all 12 powers, you would see how directly linked they are to curiosity. Let me just take a couple of them. Imagination. So logic will get you from A to B. Imagination will take you everywhere. Think how important our imagination and being creative has given birth to the new and that which was thought impossible to make happen. Landing humans on the moon, people flying around the world in metal tubes, manipulating genetics to cure cancer. Let me take another one, zeal or enthusiasm. When curiosity is energized by zeal or enthusiasm, it carries us beyond the known to explore significantly. And then I'm just going to give you one more. Release or elimination, which I've always been fascinated by. It's kind of an interesting concept to be one of our powers. But letting go of the so-called known, right? Einstein said there, we can't solve problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. So it really is important. Believing the world was flat had to give way so that we could understand the roundness of our planet and all the other planets in our solar system and the universe. Newtonian physics had to give way to the concepts that we now understand about atoms and molecules in quantum physics. So you could go through every one of these 12, and I bet you, I promise you, you would find a connection to curiosity. We see curiosity in our own observations all the time, if we're talking about children. So we certainly know, have you ever watched a newborn who's fascinated by this thing called a hand and they can't quite figure out what to do with it and whether or not they're even attached to it? They look at it, they do strange things with it, they poke themselves in the eye with it, they scratch themselves with it, but sooner or later, through their curiosity, they discovered this must be a part of me because I can somehow manipulate this and I can do great things with it. Then we have walking, crawling, and walking. You know, being stationary isn't natural for a child. They're too curious. And so they really take up crawling and then eventually walking because it's a little faster because they want to explore their world. Their curiosity takes them beyond the sedentary. And then we have teenagers. Teenagers, right? Their curiosity about how much power do they have and how much independence do they have takes them to new lengths of breaking away from the norms of family life into a new world for themselves. So curiosity is a pretty strong element and really essential to all that we do. There have been some attempts to actually categorize, like on a continuum, people's curiosity. And these categories are a little weak, but it gives us something to think about. So the first category is there are those people who are just fascinated by the unknown. Okay, they get high on exploring, which makes them curious. You ever known people like this? They love music, they love art, they love nature, they love going new places, eating new foods. They're just curious by nature. And they're the ones who are also physical seekers of curiosity. What does it feel like to jump out of a plane or scale a mountain without any things to keep you from falling? The next category are problem solvers. We have people who are a little more practical in their curiosity. They're motivated primarily on the need to solve particular problems. You know, it could be a cure for cancer or new heart devices that you can put in someone to extend their life when their heart's giving out. But they focus primarily their curiosity on what they can solve to help. And then we have the empathizers. These are people who are fascinated by the thoughts, feelings, and experiences of others. They're the people who are just curious about what makes people tick. Why do you think that? Why do you do that? Okay. And then we have, on the other end of the continuum, we have people who avoid curiosity at every turn. People for whom there's a low tolerance to stress and differentness, and they appreciate sameness and routine. So, curiosity is a powerful gift bestowed on us all. And when we allow ourselves the freedom to explore it, it moves us to discoveries that magnify our appreciation for ourselves, for others, and for the world. Curiosity can be squelched by those in power, parents, teachers, authorities. In truth, sometimes it's out of their concern for our well-being, or it may also be their concern for losing control of us, since we may go places that they don't know anything about. And we have to be careful that we don't squelch our own curiosity when we fear what is not known and the retribution from others for going there. We need to remember, as the song that Sam just sang, there are no mistakes, just lessons to be learned. So now I want to ask you quickly about your curiosity. Are you enthusiastically curious? If so, about what? People? Places? Things? Have you had periods in your life when you were more curious? If so, when was that? If you're less curious now, what brought that about? What's the biggest deterrent to your curiosity? How is your curiosity nurtured by you and the people who care about you? That's a really important thing for us to think about. So I'm going to leave you with a little homework for the week. I love it when Lawrence gives us homework, things to work on during the week. So here's it. This week, raise your conscious awareness about your curiosity. Identify something that you're curious about. Perhaps it's something you've been thinking about for a while, on and off, just haven't really kind of focused on it. Or it might be something new that pops up for you today. In either case, shine a light on that curiosity. Write about it. Talk with a friend about it. And if you were to pursue that curiosity, what might be the gift in it for you? And now I'm going to turn it over to Carmela. Namaste. I knew that would happen.
You took my speech. I need that, Bob. Oh, yeah, you still have a page of mine. That's okay. I love you. It's all good. So, I'm going to channel Reverend Lawrence Palmer. That reminds me of a story. So, on my business social media, I tend to post very positive posts, you know, and often they're about gratitude. And this one day, usually I just get likes and hearts and all that. But this one day, this woman responds to me privately. And she says, I want to be in appreciation, but how can I be in appreciation when I am in constant pain? Now, I have to say, this rendered me a little speechless. And as many of you know, that doesn't happen quite often. I felt a little guilty. Here I am telling this person who is in chronic pain to be appreciative. So I went into curiosity, as Bob is saying. I really went into curiosity saying, okay, Carmela, you know, you're healthy. You're doing okay in life, and so maybe it's easy for you to be appreciative. Now, how does this woman who is in chronic pain, how does she get into appreciation? And when I go into these questions, I go back to my foundation. And Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, is one of my heroes. It should be all of your hero, too. I guess most of you know the story of her healing, but if you don't, I will briefly tell it for those that don't know it. Myrtle had tuberculosis most of her life. In fact, as a child, she was told to be considered invalid, so she thought of herself that way. And later in life, she actually got worse, and doctors had basically given up on her. But Myrtle and her husband, Charles, the co-founders of Unity, were very curious, and they were into spirituality, metaphysics. And they were told by some friends to go to a lecture by someone called Dr. Weeks. And Dr. Weeks basically changed Myrtle's life. She walked out of that lecture a changed person. She absorbed the idea that through her thoughts and what her words, she could change her body. She says, I was in despair when I found practical Christianity. I took it up and I was healed. Now, she didn't heal right away. She made it a practice to sit every day and speak words of appreciation to her body. And this took years, actually. So what I'd like to share with you are four lessons that I took away from this story, and then how I answered this woman. So, one, appreciation is an active pursuit. Myrtle didn't wait until she felt better, until she was healed, until she felt inspired to appreciate. No. She made it a practice. Every day, she spoke words of appreciation to every part of her body. She says, I went to all the life centers in my body and spoke words of truth, words of strength and power. So I ask you, are there areas of your life where you're waiting to be appreciative? Your bank account, your home, your spouse, your kids. Are there areas where you can appreciate now and not wait for things to be perfect or how you'd like them to be? I know that's the case for me. I take things for granted as well. So I challenge you there. Two, appreciation sometimes takes faith. At the time, there was no cure for tuberculosis, obviously, and there was no reason for Myrtle to believe that she would be healed, really. She had to believe in something she could not see yet. She held on to that faith, and it was unwavering. And that's one of the reasons I admire her. Whenever I read anything about Myrtle, I always feel embarrassed about my weakness. I'm always like, oh, God. She had unwavering faith. She acted as if it were already done. She says in Healing Letters, I applied spiritual laws effectively, blessing my body temple until it manifested the innate health of spirit. These wonderful laws will work for you too when you apply them diligently and in faith. So can you appreciate something, even if you can't see it yet, can you appreciate that it's already done? Can we appreciate, for example, that we have a vaccine for COVID or whatever it is that you're feeling right now? I carry a $1 billion bill in my wallet. I clearly don't have $1 billion. But I'm already in appreciation that that's a possibility, that endless abundance is there for me. So I challenge you there as well. Three, appreciation may require positive denial. Now, if you've been around Unity for a while, you know that we pray, in our prayers, we use positive denial. Now, Myrtle didn't deny that there was the appearance of tuberculosis in her body. That was the appearance. She never denied that. But she denied the fact that that illness had power over her. She would repeat, I am a child of God, and therefore I do not inherit sickness. She kept affirming this until she was healthy. Again, I honor her because I'm not there yet either. I don't know if you are. So, is there a place in your life where there's the appearance of lack? Again, money. Money is a big topic. Relationship, your kids. Maybe you don't have the body you want. I know I want to lose some pounds. Can we appreciate that? And know that empty bank account, that lack of a husband or a boyfriend or whatever it is not real. It's just the appearance. There's a higher truth. And so can we do positive denials in this way? And number four, that challenging moments can be a portal for appreciation. Now again, look at Myrtle. I think, you know, maybe I speak for some of you. We take things for granted, as I said before. I took my health for granted when I wrote that woman. And she obviously was in a different place. And we can take things for granted, especially when they're good. And Myrtle actually says that she took her body for granted. All those years, she believed that she was an invalid, and she bought into the tuberculosis. She says, then I asked the Father to forgive me for taking his life into my organism and there using it so meanly. So she said she was using her life meanly. So look at from this one experience that Myrtle had of healing is actually what ultimately created Unity, the Unity Movement. So from this one bad thing, not only did she heal, she started teaching others to heal, and that is the story of the foundation of Unity. 2020 has clearly been a very challenging year. It has been a challenging year for everyone, even if nothing changed in your life as far as financials or you didn't get sick. We had to adjust and adapt to new things. But I'm seeing a silver lining already. I see how much we appreciate what really matters more, how much we value our friendships, our health. I mean, there's a reason why we're all constantly on Zoom, right? So much beauty is coming out of this challenging moment. So I want to leave you with another challenge. What are some ways that you can grow your appreciation? And I hope that something in there sparks something that you can really work on that this week, and I'd love to hear from you afterwards. So thank you very much for listening. All right. So, speaking of appreciation, I want to say that we appreciate the many, many ways you give. Of course, if you could give financially, whatever the amount, we appreciate that because that keeps the lights on. John has a screen up, a slide up, that tells you all the ways you can give, and we appreciate anything you can give. But know that we appreciate your energy, your love, your attention. That energy, love, and attention has kept this community alive as well. I feel it even on all the Zoom calls. So I want to bless all the ways you give, and so we're going to do the offering blessing. With a grateful heart, we acknowledge God as source of all that is. Today, we let go of any lack of concern of lack and allow good to unfold in our lives. Good is ours. Good and more good is ours. And ever-increasing good is ours. Everywhere we go, we see this good. We feel it. We experience it. We freely give it, and it multiplies itself around us. And so it is. Amen.